accession number 23329, reel 4.
I thought it was too late to jump, and I felt strangely at peace, resigned to a companionable death. Then I saw that the front gunner, who was a married man with a small daughter, hadn't jumped, but was still standing by the open hatch. I leapt down, saw that he was hanging onto the geodetic struts behind him, and I tried to push him out, but he hung on, and I thought, what have I got to lose? So I jumped. I felt the heat of the fire for a moment, then I brushed a tree and hit the ground a moment after the aircraft did. I landed chin first, fortunately in a freshly dug vegetable garden, and knocked myself out for 20 minutes. Eventually I found a way out of the garden and walked through Gonesse, the village where Concorde crashed a couple of years ago. Our bombs were bringing down plaster from the buildings. A couple of Germans came towards me. I was wearing a collar and tie, and I had my cap on. I tucked my flying boots under my trousers. I certainly didn't look as if I'd just jumped out of an aeroplane. And the Germans looked at me curiously in the moonlight. So I took a chance and I flung out my arm and gritted, "Heil Hitler!" And they responded with evident relief. On an open road, I heard the last of our aircraft turn for home, and I could see them. I could see the Lanks at 8,000 feet. I've never felt so lonely. 8 days later, French police arrested me when they found me after the curfew and handed me over to the Germans instead of to the resistance, as they should have done. I discovered that in 1949 when I retraced my route and found at Provins, where I had been captured, that the hotel proprietor had been chief of the resistance, and I should have been handed over to him and flown back to England by Lysander. He even knew my name. That night, 4 Wellingtons, a Halifax, and a Stirling were lost. 33 men died and 3 survived. The rear gunners from the 2 460 Squadron Wellingtons lost, and myself. My rear gunner bailed out when he saw flames streaming past his turret, and typical Godfrey, he landed on Gestapo headquarters. I don't know what happened to our wireless operator who was standing in the Astrodome, but I think he was probably hit on the first attack. Bomber Command could ill afford such losses the night before that first 1,000 raid. I think I rather skated over the 8 days I was on the loose. Having met the Germans and gone on a bit,
I was very lonely as I watched the aircraft fly home. I went on and kept passing through hamlets rather than villages, I should say. And eventually, at about 5:30, having been shot down at 2:40 on the Saturday morning, the 30th of May, I found myself in the marketplace of a village, which I discovered later was called Sevran, S-E-V-R-A-N. And they were just putting up the market stalls, and people were beginning to look a little bit curiously at me. So I found a side street, and I went down that and came to the church. So I went into the churchyard, and I found that a hedge met a stone wall at an angle, so that if I crept in right to the sharp point of the angle, I was pretty well protected. In a shed at the back of the church, I found a couple of old boards, so I took those round as it had been raining, and I spent the day there. Quite a lot of activity was going on in the church. I discovered subsequently that it was a festival of motherhood. And so I had something to amuse me, watching through the interstices of the hedge. And I licked the rain off the leaves, and that was all I had all day. I did have an escape kit in which there was chocolate, but I hung on to that. I thought I might need it later. Around, I suppose, 7 o'clock in the evening, an old lady came around the hedge and threw out some dead flowers from the church and saw me. And she looked inquiringly, so I said, I was English, so je suis anglais, un aviateur, and off she went. So I waited to see what happened. And a younger woman, who in fact was her daughter, came and asked if I needed some help, she asked in English. So I said, yes, any help would be welcome. So she said, we'll wait there. And she came back with another young woman about 10 minutes later, when the church had cleared. And they said, can you run? And I said, yes. So we ran to a nearby building, which was a baby clinic, in fact. But there was a flat on top, and this is where I was taken. We had a meal, and and then we looked out the window at the German soldiers who were parading right beneath us. I could have spat on them, but it didn't seem a very good idea. Anyway, I was put to bed, and my hostess said that she had phoned her husband, and he would... he was planning to drive to Switzerland on the Monday, and he would take me. About midnight, or a bit after, they woke me, and her husband was there. Their names, which I didn't know at the time, but which I discovered later, Jean and Hélène Bouvelot. They said that the Germans had found my parachute and had a very intensive search going, and the best thing was to get me out. And the Jean Bouvelot had a young man with him who turned out to be a poet, and after the war became quite distinguished. His name was Jean Lelong. As they walked down the street, it was a moonlight night again, I kept lagging behind, which was what we had been told to do in these circumstances, so that they could, if caught by the Germans or pulled up by the Germans, could claim that they didn't know who was behind them and know that they would have got away with it. But anyway, they kept saying, no, no, stay with us. So after a couple of miles, we got to a wood, and they said if I walked through that wood, I would find on the other side a house on the edge of a quarry. It was an empty house, and they would come and see me the following day. I had an awful struggle through the wood in the dark, brambles everywhere, but I got through eventually, and there was a house on the edge of a quarry. It had very high gates, but I climbed over those, walked around to the back of the house, and I found a sort of sleep out. Believing the house to be empty, I didn't bother to contain my noise at all, and there was a big mattress propped against the wall, so I flopped that down on the floor and went to sleep. In the morning, I looked out through, it was fly wire really, not windows, but fly wire. I looked out, and there was a woman hanging out her washing. The house wasn't empty at all. So I stayed all day, and when it got dark, which was very late, because it was double summertime at that time, I climbed back over the gate and went on my way. In fact, I'd gone to the wrong house. There was another house on that quarry, and my friends came out the following day, and I wasn't there. They had given me a Macintosh and a beret and a haversack in which there were a few items, including a tin of sardines, some tobacco, and some cognac. There were matches also, several items of that kind. Anyway, I got to a place called Lagny on the Marne, and I was very doubtful about crossing the bridge. I thought it would be guarded. So I found a boat, but it was chained and locked, and I couldn't get it. So I thought, well, perhaps I'd swim across. Then I thought, well, I'll have a good look at the bridge first. So I did, and I couldn't see anybody. So I crossed it quite safely. And I went on. Every village I passed through had heaven knows how many dogs. And as soon as I got to the first house, off would go a dog, barking its head off. And by the time I got to the end of the village, there was a furious chorus of barking. But nobody came out, and they probably thought it was a German patrol or something. Sometimes I headed across country, but it was rather difficult to keep direction. At one time, I was sitting on the edge of a small stream, filling my water bottle, which came from my escape kit. And I also had tablets to put in to purify the water. But anyway, I was squatting on the bank getting the water, and I heard a furious stamping behind me. Realized it was a bull, and I hopped across that stream from a standing or a squatting start. There was a slaughterhouse nearby there too, and no, I think that was another night, because I actually got water out of the ruts in the road, and I may be mixing things up a bit. I think the slaughterhouse was near where the bull was. I got the water from the ruts on the road further on. I slept in a barn and went on the next day. And by the Tuesday, I was getting hungry. So I went to what seemed to be a small chateau, and I went to the back, and a woman came out, and I simply told her who I was, and she looked very frightened, disappeared, and a moment later her husband came brandishing an axe. So I didn't stay any longer. And just a little further down the road, I came across a woodcutter, stopped to have a chat, and he offered me half his lunch if I would come back at 1 o'clock. That's what it was. But I said I'd go on a bit further, because I was looking, by now I was looking for somewhere to spend the day, because I was walking at night and holding up in the daytime. And I could see a farmhouse through on the other side of a wood. And so I went through there, and the farmer was a Belgian. He gave me huge piece of bread with some kind of pate on it, and told me that there was a shed in the wood where I could hold up for the day. He came out, came down to the shed a bit later, and said, "You don't wear your beret like a Frenchman." So he showed me how to wear the beret, and he said, "You don't walk like a Frenchman." So he had me walking up and down a path in the wood, learning to walk like a Frenchman. The Wednesday, I didn't give myself away to anybody. I remember I was in a barn, lying behind some farm machinery. Now, I could see everything that was going on in the farmyard, but they didn't see me. And on the Thursday, having again slept the night in the Wednesday night in the barn, not the night, having walked through the night and settled into the barn in the morning. Later in the day, I saw the farmer. I was pretty hungry, so I made myself known, and he said, well, stay where you are, and later on we'll come over and get you. So I took him at his word, and indeed he came and got me, and I found myself sitting down to dinner at a big farm table in the kitchen. And then a little man wearing a beret, and he had a pince-nez and was carrying a briefcase, came, and I wondered who he was, and he turned out to be the local barber. And he sat me down and gave me a shave, which I realized later was a big mistake. I went on from there that night, and they had given me some eggs. And I already had some bacon, which the Bouvelots had given me. I'd forgot that item. On the Friday, I hid in a barn way up on top of bales of hay, and during the day, I did go to the farmhouse to ask for water, and the farmer's wife said, you don't want water. She filled it up with wine and told me to go back to the barn. So I did. And that evening, just about when I wanted to get on the way, a group of men, presumably from the farm, began to play cards just at the bottom of my mountain of bales of hay. They seemed to be talking about me. I wasn't sure about that. In the end, I thought, because of the curfew, I didn't want to be caught at that time after the curfew, so I wanted to get through the town, which was Provins, and so I simply slid down the hay, landed right in the middle of their game of cards, picked myself up and walked off, and heard no more from them. A bit further down the road, I met a really beautiful girl, and I almost stopped her to ask her where I could get some help, but I didn't. And I went on. I got through Provins just before the curfew. And it was still daylight at that time, almost, although it was nearly 12 o'clock. On the other side, I realized I'd taken the wrong road, and I came back. There was a canal, and I thought, well, I might as well get some water. So I was crouching getting water when I saw a torch flashing further along the canal. So I waited for a bit, but not long enough, and I walked towards where I'd seen the torch, and ran into two French policemen. In my best schoolboy French, I tried to tell them that I was on my way to Nogent-sur-Seine to look for a job. Well, I didn't have any papers, and so they, not surprisingly, took me in. Well, on the way to the police station, they told me they believed, because I told them when I realized that they were going to take me in, I told them who I was, hoping that they might let me go, but they didn't. And they told me later that they thought I might have been a German masquerading as a British airman on the loose. But by the time we got to the police station, they were quite friendly, and when we met a German officer, they flashed their torch on him, and we went on. They didn't give me away, so I thought that was all right. They said that at the police station they would give me information to take back with me if I managed to get right away. So I didn't worry too much about being taken to the police station. We went into a back room, and the wife of the sous-préfet came out in her dressing gown, and she took the eggs and bacon from my haversack, went and cooked it for me, and so I had a good meal. Then she got a map and started telling me where German aerodromes were and what sort of aircraft were on them and so on. And then she was called out into the front office. And when she came back, she looked sulky, really. And I knew something was wrong. So I asked her, and she said that the chief of police had been telephoned, and he'd come in and brought the Germans with him, and they were in the front office. So I took the Macintosh, beret, and haversack that I'd been given in Paris, or just outside, by the Bouvelots, and I gave them to her and said, look, French people gave these to me, would you get rid of them? So she whisked them away to her own quarters, and I put on my cap and walked into the outside, or the front office really, and there were three Germans. So they took me to their headquarters, and on the way I did think of making a break for it, but the opportunity really didn't arise. Anyway, I was taken to an old prison and put into a cell which I decided hadn't been used since the French Revolution. I was quite sort of excited about it in a way, with the whole adventure, except all the time I kept worrying about what had happened to the rest of the crew, although really I knew, except I didn't know, of course, that the rear gunner had bailed out. I was brought a hunk of bread with probably dripping on it, and I couldn't eat it because I just had the egg and bacon. So I made the best I could of it and hid the rest, because I was supposed to have been on the loose for 8 days and should have been very hungry. They came back to search me, and I had some maps which I'd managed to hide in the pockets of my battle jacket, in the, I don't know what you call it, the seamed thing that runs down. Anyway, they didn't find anything, and they were sent back to search me again. And this time they found one map, so they were very pleased with that. I also had a file hidden in my flying boot, and they didn't get that either. Later, the map and the file I gave to the escape committee in prison camp. Anyway,